Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Parshat Bo. This week, Rabbi Michael Hatton discusses Parshat Bo, the sojourn in Egypt. Rabbi Michael Hatton is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Michael Hatton.
The last plagues rain down on Egypt, the firstborn of the Egyptians are slain, and Pharaoh's resolve is finally shattered. The people of Israel, huddling in their hovels as the night of terror unfolds, calmly consume the paschal lamb and recount God's deliverance. Rising before daybreak, his fitful sleep punctured by fearful screams that reverberate through the august halls of his palace, Pharaoh summons Moshe and Aharon and bids them go. As the day of redemption dawns, the Egyptians impatiently drive the Hebrews out, and they journey forth to freedom. Bnei Israel traveled from Ramses to Sukkot, numbering some 600,000 men, besides the children. Also a great mixed multitude left with them, immense herds of sheep and cattle besides. The people baked the dough that they had taken forth from Egypt into unleavened cakes of matzot, for it did not rise. The people had been thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry, nor had they time to prepare provisions. The people of Israel had dwelt in Egypt for a period of 430 years. It thus came to pass, at the conclusion of 430 years, on this very day, that all of the legions of God left the land of Egypt. It had been a night of vigil for God to take them out of the land of Egypt. This night remains a night of vigil to God for all of Bnei Israel, for all generations. Shmot chapter 12, verses 37 through 42. In our mind's eye, we see the people of Israel haltingly journeying forth, still clothed as slaves, but with the proud bearing of vindicated free men. No longer burdened with bricks and mortar, they now are laden down with their worldly possessions and with vessels of gold and silver from their frightened former hosts. The Israelites press forward, accompanied by huge herds of sheep and cattle, now forming a bleating, bellowing, and braying mass. Their erstwhile taskmasters look on incredulously as the disorganized throngs wind their noisy way through the thoroughfares to impressively gather as one at the city outskirts. Finally, the interminable nightmare of enslavement and bondage draws to a climactic close as over four centuries of exile are concluded. According to the Torah's account, the people of Israel had dwelt in Egypt for a period of 430 years. Lest the reader be taken aback by this unusually large number, the Torah repeats it in the very next phrase. Thus it came to pass at the conclusion of 430 years, on this very day, that all of the legions of God left the land of Egypt. How difficult it is for us to imagine a period of state-sponsored enslavement extending over so many generations, with children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren born into a hopeless future of back-breaking drudgery, endless toil, and premature violent death. Surely no one can fail to appreciate the tragedy and injustice of that experience. For the Torah makes it abundantly clear that the enslavement in Egypt was characterized by suffering, anguish, and distress. The stated period of 430 years, however, is difficult to corroborate. For elsewhere the Torah indicates that the period of enslavement could not possibly have extended for so long. The commentaries strive to reconcile this number with the rest of the chronology that the Torah provides concerning this event, and we will examine a number of their attempts. Let us begin by demonstrating, as both Rashi and the Ibn Ezra did, that the sojourn in Egypt could not have lasted for much more than two centuries. According to the list provided in Parshat Vayigash, towards the end of Sefer Bereishit, Yaakov's extended family of children and grandchildren that descended to Egypt at Yosef's invitation numbered 70 males. Counted among this group were Levi and his three sons, Gershon, Kehat, and Merari, as recorded in Bereishit chapter 46, verse 11. Kehat, as the genealogy list in last week's Parsha indicates, was the grandfather of Moshe. These are the names of Levi's descendants, according to their birth, Gershon, Kehat, and Merari. Levi lived for 137 years. Kehat's sons were Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And Amram lived for 133 years. Amram took Yocheved, his aunt, as his wife, and she bore him Aharon and Moshe. Kehat lived for 137 years. Shmot chapter 6, verses 16 to 20. The passage concludes by noting that Moshe was 80 years old and Aharon was 83 years old when they commenced speaking to Pharaoh. Therefore, if Kehat himself was counted among those that descended to Egypt, we may use his lifespan as the starting point for the sojourn in exile. Let us assume that Kehat, Moshe's grandfather, was a young child when Yaakov and his children relocated. Simple arithmetic yields a period of 270 years for the combined lifespans of Kehat and his son, Amram. 133 plus 137 equals 270. Moshe, the son of Amram, was 80 years old when he undertook his charge to free the slaves. Not much more than a year elapsed from the time that he first stood before Pharaoh until the Exodus. Therefore, we can account for approximately 350 years. 270 years associated with Kehat and Amram, and 80 years associated with Moshe. Of course, this number assumes the rather unlikely scenario that both Kehat and Amram did not have offspring until the final year of their lives. In all probability, we must subtract quite a few years from our total to account for the overlapping lifespans of the three, as well as for the fact that Kehat may have been a grown man when the family came down to Egypt. In any case, it should be quite obvious from the above that we cannot account for a period of 430 years for the sojourn in Egypt, for as the above texts clearly state, we are dealing with a period that cannot possibly be more than 350 years. We must therefore look elsewhere for the starting point of the computation. Fortunately, there is another textual source that provides us with a clue to unravel the confusion, and it concerns Avraham Avinu. Recall that in an ominous vision that unfolded as the day waned and darkness fell, God indicated to him that his descendants would be enslaved in a land not theirs, but would eventually emerge from the encounter a triumphant people. In this covenant between the pieces, God swore an oath to the aged progenitor that his children would in fact possess the land of Canaan. The narrative states, "As the sun was setting, a deep slumber fell upon Avraham, and a great dark and fearful gloom seized him. God said to Avraham, 'You shall surely know that your offspring will be sojourners in a land not theirs. They shall be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. The nation that they shall serve I will judge, and afterwards they shall go forth with great substance. You shall be gathered to your ancestors in peace, and shall be buried after old age. The fourth generation shall return to here, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet full.'" Bereishit chapter 15, verses 12 to 16. According to this text, Avraham's descendants are to be sojourners for a period of 400 years, and are to be enslaved and oppressed during that time. But to which descendants does the Torah refer? Does it speak of Avraham's distant descendants, such as Kehat, Amram, and Moshe? Or can we perhaps understand it as a reference to Avraham's immediate descendant, namely his own son, Yitzchak? There is as well an inherent ambiguity concerning the 400 years. Does this phrase modify the first part of the verse, in which case it describes the period of sojourning? You shall surely know that your offspring will be sojourners in a land not theirs for 400 years? Or does it instead modify the second part of the verse, in which case it describes the period of enslavement and oppression? They shall be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. The traditional sources, though mindful of the verses in Parshat Bo that speak of a period of 430 years, nevertheless remain cognizant of the fact that this time period is an impossibility if we start the count from the actual descent to Egypt. This is particularly so when we recall that the sojourn in Egypt did not at all begin as an experience of enslavement and bondage, for as long as Yosef and his policies were alive, the children of Yaakov enjoyed a privileged status. Therefore, all of the traditional commentaries understand the descendants in question to be a reference to Yitzchak. If we begin the count of 400 years from the birth of Isaac, we can achieve plausible results. When Abraham was 100 years old, Yitzchak was born. We know that Yitzchak was 60 years old at the birth of Yaakov, Bereishit 25, verse 26. We know that Yaakov in turn was 130 years old at the time of the descent to Egypt, for so he relates his age to Pharaoh at their audience, Bereishit chapter 47, verse 9. Thus, a total of 190 years elapsed from the birth of Isaac until the descent to Egypt, 60 plus 130. This would leave 210 years for the duration of the actual enslavement in Egypt. It could account for the genealogy of Levi, Kehat, Amram, and Moshe mentioned earlier. 400 minus 190 equals 210. In addition, it would explain God's promise to Abraham that the fourth generation shall return to here, for that is roughly the number of generations that actually passed in Egypt from the time of the descent until the Exodus. Accordingly, the 400 years must be understood not as the period of enslavement, which as we have seen could not have been even 200 years, but rather as the period of sojourning. Considering the covenant of the pieces in this light, we can begin to understand it as a great test of Abraham's faith and resolve. Earlier, he heeded the divine call to leave behind home and hearth in order to build a new nation in a new land, and now he waits patiently for the fulfillment of God's promise of offspring. Here he is informed that indeed he will have children, but from the moment that his child is born, his tenuous hold on the land of Canaan will begin to slip away. He and his children and his children's children will be transient sojourners in Canaan, and the land will not be theirs. They will wander as nomads and suffer exile in a foreign land until they are remembered by God and restored. Nevertheless, Abraham perseveres in his trust in God, for like a true and sincere revolutionary, his commitment is buoyed by a far-off vision of triumph, though he knows full well that he will not live to see it unfold. We have succeeded in accounting for the 400 years of God's promise and the four generations of his oath, but there remain two further complications. The verses in our parsha declare that Bnei Israel dwelt in Egypt for a period of 430 years. We know that at most we can account for 400 of those years if we take the exegetical liberty of beginning the count from the birth of Isaac. This leaves us with an unresolved 30 years. Also, we demonstrated that Yaakov's descendants certainly did not dwell in Egypt for much more than 200 years. We are therefore forced to adopt the reading of the Septuagint, preserved in the Talmud, Megillah 9a, that dwelling in Egypt, quote-unquote, is not to be interpreted narrowly as signifying a geographic location. Instead, dwelling in Egypt is to be understood thematically as the state of being homeless and unconnected to the land. For Yitzchak and his descendants never succeeded in establishing permanent settlement in Canaan. As the above-cited Talmudic passage reads the verse, the people of Israel had dwelt in Egypt and other lands for a period of 430 years. With respect to the 30 years, there are a number of solutions. Rashi, based on the much earlier Seder Olam, an earlier Midrashic source that traces biblical chronology, explains that the 400 years are to be reckoned from the birth of Isaac, as explained above. The additional 30 years are to be counted from the covenant between the pieces, Brit Ben Abitarim. For Rashi maintains that Abraham was 70 years old at that time. Since Abraham was 100 years old at the birth of Isaac, it can be easily calculated that 30 years elapse from the time of Brit Ben Abitarim until Isaac's birth, when Abraham was 100. 100 minus 70 equals 30. These 30 are our missing 30 years. The difficulty with Rashi's interpretation, however, is that the Torah explicitly states, in Bereishit chapter 12, that Abraham left Haran to journey to Canaan at the age of 75. How then could the covenant between the pieces, which plainly occurs after Abraham's arrival, have taken place 5 years before he left Haran? This dilemma forces the Seder Olam to adopt the highly unconvincing explanation that Abraham in fact undertook two journeys to Canaan. The first one, when Abraham was 70 years old, witnessed the covenant between the pieces. Afterwards, Abraham returned to Haran and only ventured forth again 5 years later at the age of 75, as indicated in Genesis chapter 12. There is no textual evidence to support this interpretation. Much more convincing is the argument of the Ibn Ezra, who maintains that in fact Avraham departed for Canaan the one and only time at the age of 75, just as the Torah states. The additional 5 years are to be reckoned from the time that Avraham left the city of Ur, his birthplace, for that is when his journey properly began. In other words, Avraham was 70 years old when he left Ur to journey towards Canaan. He, his wife, his nephew, and his aged father arrived in Haran and remained there for a time, as the verses at the end of Parshat Noach suggest. Finally, 5 years later, at the age of 75, the odyssey towards Canaan was resumed, and soon after his arrival, God sealed the covenant between the pieces with him. It should be pointed out that Ibn Ezra's explanation is somewhat conjectural as well, for the Torah nowhere records Avraham's age when he left Ur, but only when he left Haran. Ibn Ezra explains, the period of 400 years begins with the birth of Yitzchak. The additional 30 years cover the period from the time that Avraham left behind his birthplace of Ur Kasdim and arrived with his father in Haran. There Avraham remained with his father for a period of 5 years. Avraham arrived in Canaan at the age of 75, and at no time thereafter did he return to Haran. Thus, the birth of Yitzchak concluded 30 years from the time that Avraham left his land, for his role as central, and the land of Canaan was given to him. Commentary to Shmot, chapter 12, verse 42. What is perhaps most striking about Ibn Ezra's interpretation, aside from its mathematical elegance, is that it allows us to neatly close the circle of the Exodus story. As it now turns out, the beginning of this sojourn in Egypt properly finds its source in Avraham's initial journey from his birthplace of Ur. It is at that moment that the promise of Canaan is first extended to him, and it is that divine oath that sustains him throughout his trek. The story of the descent to Egypt and the enslavement is thus recast as part of a much larger matrix, one that is characterized by the unsettled state of wandering and homelessness. Egypt, therefore, is not an independent experience, but the condition of being away from the land of Canaan, or of lacking an enduring footing while yet in it. Therefore, the Torah properly begins the count of the sojourn in Egypt, not from the time of Yaakov's arrival, nor even from Isaac's birth, but rather from the time of Avraham leaving Ur forever. His life of trust, of trial, and of eventual triumph is thus reflected in the lives of his descendants, who eventually emerge from the crucible of Egypt as a nation. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Hatton. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.